You wouldn't know, of course, looking at you or me, but we Hoosiers are, statistically speaking, some of the unhealthiest people in America. Name the metric, and chances are Indiana has a woeful national ranking. Birth weight, fitness, non-medical drug use, chronic disease prevalence, and yes, life expectancy. Simply put, we eat and smoke too much, we exercise and sleep too little, and as a result, we die too soon. 5 years earlier on average than our counterparts in, say, oh-so-healthy Hawaii. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll examine Governor Eric Holcomb's push for a sweeping overhaul of the state's public health system. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. Painfully aware of Indiana's collective poor health and the cost it carries, Governor Eric Holcomb wants Hoosiers to turn over a new leaf. And no, I'm not talking about kale, spinach, arugula, or some other vitamin-packed, immunity-boosting superfood. No, a year and a half ago, the governor created a 15-member commission to evaluate the state's public health system and recommend improvements. The group's findings helped shape an ambitious package of reforms that the governor is advocating in this year's legislative session. Joining me to talk about the proposal are Republican Senator Ed Charbonneau of Valparaiso, chair of the Senate Committee on Health and Provider Services, Republican Representative Ann Vermillion of Marion, vice chair of the House Committee on Family, Children, and Human Affairs, Dr. Christina Box, Indiana's State Health Commissioner, and Dr. Virginia Kane, director of the Marion County Public Health Department. Thank you all for being here for our discussion of this critically important topic. Let me start with some definitions, if we could, because I think a lot of us, healthcare, public health, they all get conflated in it. Dr. Box, let's start with you. Why should we pay attention with sort of the nuance here? We're talking in this legislation, we're going to talk about focuses on public health as opposed to healthcare. Why is that an important distinction?
So most people consider their health to be mostly just about the clinical care they receive, the treatment that they get to treat chronic diseases in their doctor's office. And that's really a small part of your health. Public health addresses those preventative things. So we prevent injury, prevent chronic disease. Really, the best way to look at this is that those two things need to be married and joined together, working together.
And yet right now, if you look at expenditures traditionally in this state, and frankly, 49 other states across the country, we see that it's the healthcare that gets the bulk of funding and so forth. How do we get people to understand that maybe if you spend a little bit of effort on the front end, Virginia Kane, that we could save on the back end?
You know, what's incredible is that Indiana ranks for the national percentage of public health funding to 25% lower ranking. So we're the lowest. But if you look at
48, right? So if I had a big foam finger band, or it would say 48. I'm not sure how that would be.
Well, we're 45th, but 45th, that's no Great Lakes to be proud of, for example. But even more important than that, if you looked at the per capita funding that we see in each of our counties, some of our counties as low as $1.25 is just incredible.
Scott County, that's a per capita.
Yes, it's just, I'm sorry, Scott County, but that's just incredibly low. How are you able to protect your residents and your citizens?
Let's put it in context. Your county, for instance, where we're sitting right now, is more than $80
per capita. So my county is actually $83, the incredible advantage that I have is that I do a lot of going after a lot of federal grants that a lot of these small counties, they're not really eligible, nor do they have the proper infrastructure to be able to bring that type of funding into their county. 70% of our funding comes from property taxes in most places.
So geography really is that key about determining, along with maybe genetics and environmental factors, certainly geography.
Yeah. First off, my hat's off to the governor to bring this to the front. Because I think, if nothing else, this the report that was done brings to light data. Data that quite possibly we haven't been paying attention to at the state level. And because it's funded, as Dr. Kane said, at the local level. But what we're seeing here and what I believe has got to happen is a meshing of, and it's a transformational from paying attention to very expensive treatment that we're very good at, in flipping back and paying attention to prevention. And it is going to affect the workforce. It is going to affect every part of our economy. The issue is the results don't show immediately or even semi-immediately. A lot of them are long-term. So one of the things we have to do is identify how are we going to measure what you will get.
I definitely want to jump into that, but I want to set the stage too again, which is how serious our current plight is. I mean, you talk about the data, and you're right, we could talk about the economic impact of chronic illness on the workforce and the insurance costs and the health care costs. We could talk about rankings. In fact, we've already talked about some rankings. What's the one thing, if you had to buttonhole one of your colleagues who's sort of looking at you saying, I don't think this is a really big deal. Give me the 10-second one factoid that would get my attention.
I will give you that. One thing that I want to say is that we spend a lot of time evaluating personalized health care. That is what I get when I go to the doctor, when you get. This is public health. So this is the totality of all of us getting our personalized health care, which is we go and we check our own, you know, our cholesterol and our and everything else in our lives, the totality of the public. So I do tell my legislators that we need to be setting this infrastructure on the totality of all of our personalized health care, which some of us in Indiana are lacking in putting effort, or not effort, just our numbers to individualize our personal health care as a priority. So I think for me, I come from a rural community. You are more likely to die in my area than you are in my district than you may be in Marion County. I agree with Senator Charbonneau. That is a public health infrastructure that they're recommending. So I think the data is stark, and that's something that I think we definitely have to pay attention to. But I think it makes a difference. It makes a difference. We spend a lot of time in the legislature talking about Medicaid. Obviously, now the cost of health care. But those are individualized.
Medicaid, second largest budgetary line item next to education.
It all comes together, but it is a difference between the public health and a personalized health.
Cool. So let me just, you know, for most people, they may not know, what do you mean by public health?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not quite sure what I mean about that. So, for example, recently we had someone diagnosed with meningococcal meningitis. What would have prevented that? Immunizations, vaccinations. Public health really focuses on immunizations, trying to protect people. But somebody might have gone to the restaurant last night, you know, and, you know, locally, if things are not taking properly inspections in those restaurants, you can have some adverse outcomes. People getting sick, food, nausea and vomiting, food poisoning. So things of that nature is really critical. But now you want to talk about healthcare costs? When you have poor health outcomes, what happens? You have a higher utilization of services. You have a lot of people have to frequent those services more frequently than if you prevented it. And I think everybody's concerned about the health care costs in a community.
So there's that literal cost and then sort of the intangible or cost. You talked about the health expected or the life expectancy disparity, and I don't mean to pick on Scott County. They seem to be the, but I mean, you look at a 9-year disparity in life expectancy from, I believe, Hamilton County, for instance, which is on the high end, to Scott County. The stats, we could pick a million stats. Let's do this. Let's stipulate that we're not keeping pace with much of the rest of the country and that we need to do more for Hoosiers. All right. Dr. Box, how did we get where we are? I mean, I look at, we've got the largest enrollment medical school in the country. Our flagship institution, Indiana University, has two public health schools, Fairbanks in Indianapolis and a separate degree-granting school of public health in Bloomington. Lots of other institutions, public and private, are training people for the healthcare workforce. Explain how we can have that infrastructure in terms of education and a pipeline for the workforce and yet have these horrible, woeful numbers.
Well, I think what we see is that a lot of people come to Indiana to train, but they don't stay in Indiana to practice. And that's a huge problem. if you're in public health and you're looking at a public health system that is not well resourced, then you may choose to go to another state and practice because you know you're going to have the resources and the tools that you need to be able to actually provide those services, those core services that everyone should have access to do. And I give Senator Charbonneau, I agree with him. The governor took this on, and this is huge. Now, granted, we had a pandemic, and it really showed the light on some of those gaps and issues that we had. And if we hadn't had our National Guard and our hospital systems and a lot of our EMS and other people step up, we would have struggled. Many health departments joined us, but many were just not able to do that. So the governor taking this on has shown a light on it, and we have worked very hard with the commission to actually develop a true program around this. This is not just we need funding, give it to us, and we're going to provide you something. This is the program, and this is how we need to fund it.
If I could follow up on just one thing, no matter what sector of the economy you talk to, the number one issue is people, is workforce. You talked about the pipeline. We have some great medical schools in Indiana. We graduate roughly 500 medical school graduates every year. We only have 350 residencies, which means, I think right out of the blocks, we're training 150 doctors that are going to end up someplace else. Because I think the statistics show that where doctors do their residency is where they're most likely to stay.
And again, there are a lot of culprits about how we just said, how did we get where we are? And there's a lot of factors, you know, environmental factors. We talked before about social behaviors and lifestyle choices, and the fact that we do have meager funding historically for public. Maybe that's the 48 that I was talking about.
We've prioritized other things, and we've moved the needle.
Well, is it money issue, or is it something deeper? And I bring this up because COVID, I thought, really was, put a bright light on something. It seemed to me that in the wake of COVID, you would think you would celebrate public health and say these men and women saved our bacon. But you have this disdain or animosity that perhaps, ironically, it's harder to get things enacted now than it might have been before COVID. Am I misreading the sentiment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, especially even with the commission's proposal, we are asking our county commissioners and elected officials and county council to put skin in the game. And that hasn't happened. I think we know that the public health funding in some of our counties is the lowest budget item. But I also want to give to my local elected colleagues there, they are no different than we are right now. They have budgets, they have departments that are asking for infrastructure and personnel, and it seems to me that public health line item on each of those counties has been so lower in the ladder than most of the other departments. What I love about the commission, and even our opportunity today, is to educate our county council on what does it mean to have a fluid public health department where we are speaking with each other. And like you said, COVID opened. It was a magnifying glass of what was broken between counties, between the State Department of Health. And it also kind of elevated just the personnel issues. There's too many statutory requirements that they have to get done, but then also what we really would love for them to do to bring up those public health numbers. There's just not enough. It's a hard decision when you do outcomes with money.
Just take the simple thing that we were required to do vision screening checks for our children. And just think about that young child in third grade, and you're wondering why they're not performing like they should. Well, they can't see the blackboard. They can't read. And unless this program was in place, that problem would not be identified till maybe that person made it to high school. But then you're having a significant number of your population. You're not having the brightest and the best that you're producing from your state. But we have to be able to provide those resources for those folks who may not have it, because we need a good, well-skilled workforce in order to fill out the jobs here in the state of Indiana.
Is that the way, Senator, that this could be packaged? Certainly, I think the governor has framed it this way for some doubters, perhaps in the Republican caucus in the House and the Senate, who think that public health is maybe should be underfunded because you hear talking about the nanny state and people need to be self-reliant, and you hear socialized medicine, which again, we're not talking about socialized medicine, but when you, for instance, Representative, talk about gathering data for on a statewide basis, telling people to say, all the only person that matters in healthcare is me, which is, another issue for another day. But in terms of trying to sell this, because you are carrying some of the bills, is it just about money? Or is it, again, attitudinal? Is there some notion here that this is an arm of Big Brother that's just trying to get in the way of personal freedom?
Yes. The timing of this, it comes after a pandemic where there were a number of issues that were raised, and many people were not happy, not comfortable. But to me, the report, first of all, has presented data. There shouldn't be, as long as we can educate everyone, there shouldn't be any question about the fact that we need to do something. The governor's recommendation came out with $240 million, I think, a year.
The governor's, that's the commission's.
The commission.
New money, $240.
Yeah, and the governor scaled it back in his budget.
And for those keeping score, to $120 million in the first year of the biennium and $227 in the second year of the biennium.
Right, right. The third piece, I think, is where we get into the debate or the, you know, what's going to be different? What is, are we just going to be sending more money into the locals to do the same things that have always been done? And we've had a lot of talk about that, a lot of discussions about it, and there are some significant changes from an operational standpoint. One is the fact we've talked about the collaboration between or among counties, and also that regional
support system.
And again, we have to be careful on how we present that, because you know the folks that are adamant about state government not taking over local government are going to point to that and say there, and it's not. It's there to help the local health departments to collaborate, maybe use someone among three counties rather than each county having their own.
And I wonder if it's not so much, sometimes my perception is not bigfooting local elected officials. It's more, as we saw in this last session, a concern about the health authorities, the people who are actually trained, and now they've lost the ability to, for instance, declare emergencies. That now has been thanks to you and your colleagues. I don't know how you voted, you two. But basically, the message to local health officials was, you may have the degree, you may have the expertise, but
we make the decision.
We're going to make the decision. So are there so many cross currents here, I guess.
But we did in the bill, and I just want to pick up on what Senator Charbonneau said, and that is we ensured that this remains under local control. The county commissioners vote to opt into
that's
this every 5 years.
That's very apparent to anybody who reads the report.
Yeah. And also our county council members will continue to have to sign off on whatever budget that the county commissioners and the local health board decides on. But more importantly, what this is really establishing, and this is what worked really well in some communities across the state of Indiana, is bringing everybody to the table. And there are really good studies that show when you bring your not-for-profits together and your hospital and healthcare systems and your elected officials and your public health people and maybe your independent colleges or your universities to address a particular problem within a community, you have less duplication of services and better delivery of those core public health services.
We should point out, Dr. Box and Dr. Kane, you were both members among the 15 members of that panel that came up with 32 recommendations, runs over 100 pages. Of course, on the cover, you've got a Benjamin Franklin quote. I thought, hey, I don't have to go to medical school to understand an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
I think the main thing, the main driver should be this, is the businesses, the economy for the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
And you say, well, we're fine where we are now, but you know what? Indianapolis, at one time, we were number one for the black infant mortality. And it's not that our rate ever changed, but all of the surrounding cities and in this country,
number one, we were the worst. They got better.
And so we became number one.
Yeah.
So if we stay the same, I'm a business. and I want to come into your state and bring my business, I'm looking at my health care costs.
And the important thing about that economy is that the decreasing life expectancy is in our 25 to 64-year-olds. It's not in our older 65 and older age group. That's our workforce.
So we've talked, well, headlines have focused over the past few weeks since the session began on the dollars aspect of this, and we've frankly devoted a good chunk of this discussion to that. But again, 32 recommendations, over 100 pages, six different topics, you know, about data collection and use of that data, about child development in that particular age group, about the workforce and how to ensure that there's not shortages. And I mean, go on and on. Mm-hmm. You know, when the doctor writes the prescription, says take one of these pills a day, a lot of people think, you know, I know better, I'm going to take a half of it and I'll still get better quicker. Is there a way to break this tablet in half? I mean, is it all or nothing? If there's not appetite for the funding, is there enough else in there that can make a significant difference, do you think?
Well, I think that's the journey of all of us there on the advocates of the proposal. And I think for what we're doing in the House, that's what we're trying to work that in. And how does that work? Again, we're in a budget season.
Some of it's regular. I mean, it just changes like definitions and the oversight, put more expertise on the governing panels.
But I think if you look at the line items of what's recommended in year one and year two, educating what that means to lay the foundation. Secondly, I'll always tease that the House has been very, very committed to passing a tobacco tax, and we've always been stuck in the Senate to say, well, if we're going to move into that venture, because we are one of the lowest tax rates, we need a ... arrow to what would that fund. There has been never a time in the Indiana General Assembly that we actually have two recommendations between the Governor's Health Commission, the Behavioral Health Commission, that we could pragmatically see how us having the lowest tax rate on tobacco products could actually annually fund where we need to set public health funding.
And that's certainly what advocates want to see
conversation.
Even if there are those who say taxes are not the answer, the budget surplus is such, the governor would argue that there are the dollars here to do this. Yeah. Let me ask you the same question. Again, is it all or nothing? If people say this is about, you know, there's a recession looming, we got to be very careful in shepherding our resources. Did we just quit and go home issue for the year? Or is there something else that can be done, again, that effectively moves us up the ladder in these various categories?
This is going to go through a long process for sure. In Senate Bill 4 is the implementation, and the money is in the budget. I think there are a number of things that were in the recommendations that aren't in the Senate Bill 4 because there are things that could be implemented without legislation.
And there's no omnibus bill. Yeah. I don't believe that has every aspect of all 32 recommendations in it.
Right.
And as a practical matter, we won't know the budget, frankly, until April anyway, when there's a revenue forecast. So a lot of this is practice or posturing, pick your word, until we get to that point. So you're saying you don't know.
I don't
know. If there is something we can break out. So as we move on, clearly, there are two sides forming in this. Those who say too much money, or maybe philosophically, we just don't think this is the place for government to stick its nose in our get between me and my doctor.
Well, look at our workforce and the number of employees we have in public health, and look at the national average. So we're like about at least two employees less easily in the smallest health departments compared to Illinois, Ohio, and Kentucky. Now, guys, I don't know about you. I'm a Hoosier. I'm a Hoosier. Proud of being a Hoosier. Do we want Ohio, Illinois, or Kentucky beating us out? How is that possible? So we got to have some kind of pride here, but we also need to look at and see what are the standards we need to have, and we need to meet those standards, because I'm not proud that we're 45th in terms of tobacco, high in the same level with 6 with obesity. Tobacco, that creates cancer.
Oh, yeah. There's so many. I mean, we could go right down the list, I guess, and advocates often and do. But we're almost out of time, but let me ask you this. As we move toward trying to get critical mass behind some of these measures, and certainly the committee process is moving forward. You testified in front of this gentleman's committee just this week, as a matter of fact. The governor has declared one day next week as Public Health Day, when I guess this will be sort of part of that public education. What else can and should be done? If anybody listening to this who thinks this is a significant issue, what can be done? What do you think leverage there is to persuade some lawmakers who think this is just not a priority?
Well, I think this is so foreign to so many people that helping them to understand the things we've already communicated here and the fact that, as Dr. Kane was referring to, we have established those core services that we believe should be available to every Hoosier across the state of Indiana. And additionally, we have developed state key quality improvement measures around each of those, and there will be local measures that they will be, for the first time in the state of Indiana, measuring and reporting to our legislatures every year, reporting to
accountability.
All right. We should have booked this for like a 4-hour discussion, clearly, because there is so much to talk about. Thank you all. I appreciate sharing your expertise and your passion on this issue with our listeners and viewers. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Ed Charbonneau of Valparaiso, Republican Representative Ann Vermillion of Marion, Dr. Christina Box, Indiana State Health Commissioner, and Dr. Virginia Kane, Director of the Marion County Health Department, Public Health Department. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers commentator Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, we covered a lot of ground, a lot that we didn't cover, because it's a big issue. What's the prognosis of anything happening this session?
Well, the governor's expending a lot of his political capital on this, his personal and political capital, and he's brought in the heavy hitters, as you heard this morning. The interesting thing is going to be the ask, the big budget request. Obviously, he wanted a whole lot more. The commission wanted a whole lot more. They pared it down. I think it's going to be pared down even further at budget time. But you've got the former Senate Appropriations Committee Chair Luke Kenley going out and asking for the money. He's now finding that some of the people that he said no to over the past 20 years are kind of smiling back at him when he's talking about the amount of money. But there are bigger things, bigger philosophical issues here, and it's kind of twofold. One is some legislators are just very suspicious about everything in the public health realm after COVID. And then at the local level, you've got local officials, the county council members, county commissioners, that are concerned about possible usurpation of their own prerogatives by the state coming in and saying, this is the way you must do it, even though, again, as you heard in the roundtable, you know, that's not the way that this framework is set up. So there are a lot of different elements, a lot of moving parts to this, and it's going to be a difficult kind of package to put together.
And if you do take out a significant amount of the money, again, it's already been reduced. The governor unilaterally reduced it, his ask. Does that pretty much pull the plug on everything? Or do you think, the same question I asked some of the other guests, is there something there that could still make a difference for Hoosiers?
Absolutely. I think we've gotten people talking about how regionalism and inter-county cooperation is something that's important. You know, you don't need, you know, 10 food service officers in one county and one in the next one. This will get people talking. If we can even put together a framework, that's a success.
And you talked about political capital being expended. Governor has this Public Health Day next week, State House rally of sorts. What is going to make a bigger difference, that kind of thing, or what we're not seeing that's happening behind closed doors?
Oh, I think the latter, you know, the governor and the other officials appearing next week at that Public Health Day thing will help focus some of the attention in the State House toward it, but the other is much more important.
All right. We will watch and see what happens. Ed, always appreciate your insight. Should Indiana judges be allowed to hold violent offenders without bail? Indiana's Constitution mandates bail for anyone charged with a crime other than murder or treason. We'll look at the balance between public safety and civil liberties on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of commentator Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.